The Nullarbor Plain, named after the Latin words for no tree, is a land seemingly untouched by time. Formerly the floor of the ocean, today it is an ocean of land, separating the east of Australia from the west. Although occupied by the Murning Aboriginal Nation for over 60,000 years, travel across the vast plain has always been difficult. Following British settlement, the colony of Western Australia was isolated from the rest of the continent by this vast expanse. The only viable transport going east was a slow sea voyage along the south coast of Australia. At Federation in 1901, forming the Commonwealth of Australia, an inducement to Western Australia to join the new nation was the construction of a railway. The enormity of the task was too great for the railway systems of Western Australia and South Australia to undertake. As a result, the new Commonwealth government formed the Commonwealth Railways. Starting at Port Augusta in South Australia, the proposed line would run across the Nullarbor Plain to Kalgoorlie in Western Australia, binding the nation together by rail. The new line would be built to standard gauge, meaning that a break of gauge would exist between the new transcontinental railway and the existing narrow gauge networks of Western Australia and South Australia. Nevertheless, a new transcontinental railway was to be built, dramatically cutting the time taken to cross the nation. Construction commenced in 1912 and took 5 years to complete, with difficulties owing to World War I delaying construction. For the entire 1,051 miles, or 1,691 kilometres of the new Trans-Australia Railway, no permanent sources of water were available. The only water that could be sourced would have to come from bores sunk into the ground, tapping water from the Great Artesian Basin. The first train would eventually depart Port Augusta on the 22nd of October 1917, bound for Kalgoorlie. A new era in rail transport, with rail stretching right the way across the continent, had begun. The operating conditions and logistical difficulties faced by the Commonwealth Railways were nothing short of extreme. Despite the enormous effort and expense of sinking bores across the Nullarbor Plain, the water that was supplied was of mostly poor quality. This would greatly increase locomotive repair costs and, in particular, boiler maintenance. Another issue for the new railway was the supply of coal. Neither South Australia or Western Australia had a supply of coal of suitable quality for locomotive use. This meant that coal would have to be shipped from New South Wales to Port Augusta before being sent by train to the various coaling stages located along the railway. Poor quality water, distant coal supplies, and expensive maintenance demands meant that alternate forms of motive power were of keen interest to Henry Dean, the engineer-in-chief of the Commonwealth Railways. As early as 1912, investigations were taking place into suitable locomotives powered by internal combustion engines. In particular, a proposal for a 1,000 horsepower thermoelectric engine by British locomotive builder Hawthorne Leslie, based on the Paragon system, was investigated. The benefits of locomotives powered by internal combustion engines, when compared to steam operation, were too great to ignore. Unfortunately, the technology was in its infancy. While offering great promise, concerns around the reliability of the proposed locomotives in desert conditions, the doubling of cost of the Hawthorne Leslie design, and wartime delays meant that steam operation would, reluctantly, be adopted. From the start of construction in 1912 until dieselisation was completed, the fleet of steam locomotives used by the Commonwealth Railways comprised an eclectic collection of new and second-hand motive power. A total of 97 standard-gauge steam locomotives, including two locomotive cranes, were ultimately employed in service on the Trans-Australia Railway. The backbone of the steam fleet comprised of the G and C classes in passenger service, while freight operations were handled by the K and KA classes. All of these designs were essentially duplicates of locomotives used by the New South Wales Government Railways, but had to be modified to do battle with the harsh conditions of the Nullarbor Plain. The first large group of new locomotives acquired by the Commonwealth Railways were the G class. 26 of these 460 locomotives were built by the Clyde Engineering Company in New South Wales, the Toowoomba Foundry in Queensland, and the Baldwin Locomotive Works in the United States. The G-class were based on the New South Wales C-32 class, 191 of these highly successful locomotives being built between 1892 and 1911. Entering service between 1914 and 1917, the G-class were initially used on construction trains. Once the line had opened, they were placed on express passenger duties from Port Augusta to Kalgoorlie. It is worthy to note that when the inaugural passenger service ran in 1917, 11 G-class engines were ultimately needed to complete the journey, owing to mechanical failures partly caused by the desert conditions. Sand entering the locomotive and tender axle bearings was a continual problem. During the 1920s, it became regular practice for 4 G-class engines to run the length of the Trans-Australia Railway in relay form. In 1933, the locomotives would be pushed even harder when only 2 engines would be used, with the changeover taking place in Cook. The 539-mile or 867-kilometre run an engine would make from Cook to Kalgoorlie was claimed to be the longest run by a coal-burning locomotive in the world at the time. Continual modifications were made to the G-class to help with the desert crossing. Louvers were installed to the cabs to provide the crews with a small amount of relief from the desert sun, while electric headlights and enlarged tenders with a greater coal and water capacity were fitted. Even with the tender modifications, it was still a common practice for additional water tanks, known as water gins, to be used on mainline services. The horrendous quality of the bore water used meant that boiler repairs were a constant problem. It is known that between 1919 and 1921, 4 G-class boilers had to be replaced after only 5 or 6 years of operation. The first member of the class to be withdrawn was G-8 in 1925, after only 11 years of service. After the arrival of the C-class in 1938, the remaining G-class engines were used in freight service. Withdrawals continued as maintenance demands dictated, although most would survive until after World War II. All, however, were quickly withdrawn following the arrival of diesels between 1951 and 1952. While passenger services were handled by the G-class, the task of moving freight was the domain of the closely related K and KA classes. Based on the New South Wales D50 and D53 designs of 280 standard goods locomotives, 470 of these engines were built between 1896 and 1917. Keen to emulate the success of the New South Wales engines, the Commonwealth Railways ordered 8 of the D50 class, to become known as the K class, from the North British Locomotive Company, entering service in 1916. Not long after ordering the K class, it was felt that the projected freight demand would require an additional 12 locomotives. For reasons unknown, the D53 class design was selected, despite the multiple differences between the two types, including a different design of boiler. Ignoring the advice of the new Engineer-in-Chief Norris Bell, who had replaced Henry Dean in 1915, orders were placed for not 12, but 26 of the new design, to be known as the KA class. The construction of some of the G class by Baldwin had caused something of an uproar by Australian locomotive manufacturers, especially as a new major client was owned by the Commonwealth Government. To keep the peace, an order was placed for 20 engines with Walkers Limited in Queensland, with the remaining 6 being built by Perry Engineering in South Australia. With 34 of the K and KA class engines available, the Commonwealth Railways had more than enough freight locomotives during the steam era to meet their needs. In fact, some of the KA class engines were placed into storage upon delivery. Prior to World War II, some of the surplus engines were offered for sale, not only in Australia, but also to China. With the boom in wartime traffic, some of the stored engines were put into service. Unfortunately, The Nullarbor climate and the strains of wartime operation meant that mechanical reliability suffered. In fact, surplus engines from the United States and Canada had to be imported to help keep the traffic moving. By 1946, 17K and KA class engines had already been withdrawn from service, although KA-38 had been withdrawn as early as 1925. The rest would go by 1952, following the arrival of diesels. Scrapping of these engines would be completed by 1961, with some reports stating that dynamite was used as part of the process. Probably the most remarkable steam locomotives used by the Commonwealth Railways were the C-class. In 1937, the Trans-Australia Railway was extended 56 miles or 90 kilometres southwards from Port Augusta to Port Pirie. This would meet up with a new broad gauge connection from Adelaide, built by the neighbouring South Australian Railways. This connection would replace the very slow and indirect narrow gauge line running from Tarawi to Port Augusta via Quorn. With the new direct connection, a desire to speed up services and displace the hard-pressed G-Class from frontline traffic, a new express passenger engine was sought. Once again, the New South Wales Government Railways would provide the design inspiration. In 1925, the first of an eventual 75 C-36 class 460 locomotives would enter service. Entering traffic on top link express duties, displacing smaller engines, these locomotives were free-steaming and fast-running, and their qualities were exactly what the Commonwealth Railways were looking for. One major design change made between the new C-class and the original New South Wales engines was the fitting of new 12-wheel bogey tenders. These new tenders were requested by the Commonwealth Railways to assist with long distance running across the Nullarbor, enabling a far greater coal and water capacity to be carried. Walkers Limited in Queensland would be awarded the contract to build the C-class. Not only would these be the largest steam locomotives constructed by the company, but the enormous tenders would have to be assembled in the company's own shipyard. All of the C-Class would enter service in 1938 and immediately became the flagship engine of the Trans-Australia Railway. Despite the harsh conditions, these engines proved to be reliable workhorses. From 1943, these engines would operate the entire length of the Trans-Australia Railway solo, eliminating the previous practice of swapping engines in Cook. Covering the entire 1,051 miles or 1,691 kilometres between Port Augusta and Kalgoorlie behind a single steam locomotive in regular service must surely be a record. However, increasing train tonnages and the effects of long distance running meant that reliability was becoming a problem. Despite their remarkable feats achieved in service, the C-Class were quickly demoted from frontline passenger duties when diesels arrived. After being relegated to shunting and freight work, the C-Class were withdrawn from service between 1952 and 1956. One, however, was kept on standby near Kalgoorlie until 1960 in case of flooding affecting the diesel fleet. All were scrapped during the 1960s. At the end of World War II, operations on the Trans-Australia Railway were at a crossroads. It was becoming apparent that new motive power would soon be needed to replace the ageing and worn-out steam fleet. Increased rail traffic, both during and after the war, naturally meant an increased demand for coal. However, the quality of the coal supplied from New South Wales had declined significantly, which only raised demand even more. As a result, servicing and maintenance of the locomotive fleet was being adversely affected. The challenges of maintaining adequate supplies were made even harder in 1949. Industrial action at the coal mines forced the Commonwealth Railways to convert some of their engines to oil firing. In addition, multiple train services were also cancelled during this time. Transport costs were also rapidly increasing, not only to deliver the coal to Port Augusta, but to also send the supplies onwards to the various coaling stages along the railway to Kalgoorlie. The other key element of steam operation, water, was also being affected. Despite increasing pumping and storage capacity along the railway, it was not unknown for the reservoirs to periodically run dry. What water was available from these locations had to be chemically treated to be of any value for locomotive use. No amount of treatment would make the water suitable for human consumption. Dedicated water trains were often run across the length of the railway, ensuring supplies for both staff living along the line and locomotive use were maintained. When combined with the aforementioned coal deliveries, simply moving fuel along the Trans-Australia Railway accounted for roughly 20% of all train mileages run per year. Given these difficulties, on top of the challenges of the Nullarbor Plain itself, it is important to remember the work done by the train crews themselves. In summer, temperatures have been known to reach 50 degrees Celsius or 122 degrees Fahrenheit along the plain. Firing and driving steam locomotives is already difficult and hot work. When combined with worn-down engines, extreme isolation, poor water and deteriorating coal quality, the efforts made by the train crews to get the services across the country were truly Herculean. Within months of the war being over, a study was conducted to determine the viability of diesel-electric operation on the Trans-Australia Railway. The results left the management of the Commonwealth Railways in no doubt. It was estimated that £230,000 Australian pounds, or over $15 million in present values, would be saved per year in operating costs. Despite the expense and difficulties in obtaining Australian diesel locomotives, the way forward was clear. The late Henry Dean, who had campaigned for internal combustion locomotives at the birth of the Commonwealth Railways, had been vindicated. With the decision to dieselise made, tenders were let for the supply of 11 locomotives during 1948. Despite the relatively small number of engines requested, it was projected that this would be sufficient to replace the entire fleet of steam locomotives then in service, owing to the efficiencies that diesel operation promised. Following assessment of the various proposals submitted, the contract for the Commonwealth Railway's first mainline diesels was awarded to Clyde Engineering in Sydney in 1949. Clyde Engineering had never previously built a diesel locomotive. However, they had the backing of probably the largest manufacturer of diesel locomotives in the world at the time.
In every part of the country today, glide diesel-powered trains. Travel triumphs of comfort, convenience, and beauty. Effortless speed.
This was the promise of the Electromotive Division of General Motors, or EMD. Formed in 1922 and becoming a part of General Motors in 1930, EMD had gone from strength to strength in the United States. Their lines of rugged and dependable diesel locomotives, combined with aggressive marketing, helped influence the various railroads of the United States to make the switch from steam to diesel traction for both passenger and freight duties. In 1939, EMD demonstrated their brand new FT design of diesel locomotives across the country, sending shockwaves throughout the railroad industry. For the first time, a diesel locomotive capable of heavy freight traffic that could replace steam operation in all conditions was available. The mechanical equipment was encased in a streamlined body that left a lasting impression. The FT design became an instant success with over 1,000 units built. Later versions of what became known as the F-Series were also suitable for passenger services, a true workhorse that combined strength and style in one package. The F-Series would be refined and upgraded as technical improvements became available, with new versions being offered each time. In February 1949, EMD would unveil their F7 version, offering more advanced electrical equipment than the preceding model, in turn providing more traction to the rail. Tough, good-looking and economical to maintain and operate, the F7 would become the highest-selling version of the F-Series in the US. Back in Australia, Clyde Engineering had become the official EMD licensee to build and distribute their locomotives. The submission made by Clyde Engineering to the Commonwealth Railways was for locomotives heavily based on the F7 model. Given the extraordinary service record already set by this series of locomotives in the US in broadly similar conditions, it was no wonder that this offer was selected. Making the F7 run in Australia was not as simple as building the same locomotives in Clyde's workshop. The loading gauge, that is the size you could physically build your locomotives, was considerably smaller in Australia than in the United States. In addition, the Trans-Australia Railway had been built to a lighter standard when compared to other mainline railways around the world. As a result, the Australian F7 design would have to squeeze US-sized engines and electrical equipment into a smaller size body, and yet somehow run on a lighter standard of track. It would be a tall order to make it all work. However, Clyde Engineering had just the right person to help make it happen. Frederick J. Shea was the Director of Engineering at Clyde Engineering, taking up the position in 1946. Shea was a lifelong railway engineer, having commenced as an apprentice fitter and turner with the Victorian Railways in 1907. In 1923, Shea was appointed as the Chief Mechanical Engineer for the South Australian Railways, working under the dynamic leadership of William Alfred Webb. During his time with the South Australian Railways, Shea was instrumental in designing the new big power fleet of steam locomotives for the SAR during the 1920s, consisting of the 500, 600 and 700 class engines. Based on American designs, these locomotives set a new standard of power and performance for the railways of South Australia, outclassing anything used previously. Shea's reputation as a competent engineer, with his ability to make international designs work within Australian conditions, meant that there was no one better suited to tackle this new challenge. As a result, work on making the F7 run in Australia began in earnest. The major design challenge between the American F7 and the new Australian locomotives would involve redistributing the overall weight. On the original locomotives, the entire 114 imperial tons, or 104 metric tons, was spread across four axles. The resulting axle load of 28 imperial tons, or 26 metric tons, would have been far too high for Australian service. As a result, the new design was lengthened to accommodate six axles under the body instead of four. Although the locomotive weight increased slightly, the overall axle load was reduced to a more acceptable 20.7 imperial tons, or 18.8 metric tons. Lengthening the body of the new locomotives was not the only change made. To fit the Australian loading gauge, the new locomotives were over a foot, or over 30 centimetres lower in height compared to their US counterparts. In addition, the overall body width was several inches narrower on the Australian version. One area that changed very little was the famous F-series nose design. Several of the curved nose and cab windshield pressings were imported directly from EMD. These were narrowed down to suit the Australian locomotives by removing some of the material from along the centre line before being welded together. As a result, the new design would bear a strong family resemblance to the original F-series units. Engines and electrical equipment would be imported directly from EMD and installed by Clyde Engineering. Powering these locomotives was a 16-cylinder 567B series diesel engine which could produce 1,500 horsepower for traction. Finally, on the 28th of August 1951, a new era for the Commonwealth Railways began. In a grand ceremony at Clyde Engineering, the first of the new GM-class locomotives, GM1, was started and would commence operating trials, running from Clyde Engineering's workshop to the Clyde Locomotive Depot and return. While the honour of Australia's first mainline diesel-electric locomotive would be held by the Tasmanian Government Railways X-Class, imported from English Electric in 1950, the unveiling of GM1 was significant in that it would be the first time an Australian-built diesel-electric locomotive would be used in frontline service. The game had changed, and steam power would no longer dominate Australian rails. Following successful trials, delivery of the new locomotives from Sydney in New South Wales to Port Pirie in South Australia took place. However, the break of gauges present on the Australian railway network at the time would make this process a protracted affair. Running south from Sydney under their own power, the locomotives would work through southern New South Wales to Bandiana, near Wodonga, on the border of Victoria. There, the standard gauge power bogies would be removed and broad gauge freight bogies placed under the units for transport across Victoria and part of South Australia. On arrival at Port Pirie, the original power bogies were refitted to the locomotives. Once everything had been made ready, locomotive GM1 would commence operational trials on the Commonwealth Railways network. On the 22nd of September 1951, it was noted hauling a passenger service from Port Pirie to Port Augusta. Over the next 2 weeks, further trials on the Trans-Australia Railway were undertaken before formal commissioning to regular service. On the 6th of October 1951, a ceremony was held at Port Pirie Junction Railway Station to name the new locomotive Robert Gordon Menzies, after the Prime Minister of the time. Following the ceremony, GM1 was placed into regular operation. All 11 locomotives had been commissioned by July 1952. The impact of the GM class fleet on the operations of the Commonwealth Railways cannot be understated. All regular mainline steam operations virtually ceased overnight, with only occasional special services or non-revenue roles still using steam traction. In addition, all of the locomotive depots and associated servicing facilities previously used between Port Augusta and Kalgoorlie were also closed, resulting in enormous operational savings. Staff displaced from these depot closures were transferred to either Port Augusta workshops or to the Commonwealth Railway Central Australia line, running from Port Augusta to Alice Springs. As well as displacing the existing steam fleet, 10 brand new L-class locomotives delivered from Clyde Engineering alongside the new diesel fleet were effectively made redundant upon delivery. Only two of the 10 locomotives are definitely known to have operated in service, while the rest were placed immediately into storage. All were ultimately scrapped with either minimal or no operational use at all. The promised benefits of diesel operation were realised on the Commonwealth Railways. Within a year, passenger services were sped up, with the journey from Port Pirie to Kalgoorlie now taking 25 hours instead of the previous 43 hours. The increased train speeds and the greater availability of the new diesels when compared to steam meant that additional services could also be provided. For example, the Premier passenger service run between Port Pirie and Kalgoorlie, the Trans-Australian, would increase from two services a week in 1950 to four services a week by 1953. The introduction of diesels, although the most notable development, was only part of a larger post-war modernisation of operations on the Trans-Australian Railway. The Trans-Australian Passenger Service, which had previously used wooden carriages, some of which dated back to the opening of the line in 1917, would be replaced with modern, air-conditioned carriages imported from Germany, entering service in 1952. These new carriages were remarked upon as being probably the finest passenger vehicles used in Australia and would set a new standard of comfort and style. After decades of struggle with steam locomotives, the harsh environment of the Nullarbor Plain could now not only be crossed but worked economically by the new diesel fleet. The 1950s and the introduction of the GM class would be a dramatic turning point for the Commonwealth Railways, with the system only going from strength to strength as the years would progress. While the introduction of diesels to the Trans-Australia Railway had transformed operations on that line, a new operational challenge was rapidly emerging on the Commonwealth Railways. The narrow-gauge Central Australia Railway, running north from Port Augusta to Alice Springs, was being swamped with coal trains, running from Lee Creek to serve the new power station at Port Augusta. This traffic had grown from 79,000 tonnes transported in 1946 to over 455,000 tonnes in 1953. Although new narrow-gauge diesel-electric locomotives had been ordered, the lightly built, steeply graded line through the Flinders Ranges was completely inadequate to handle the enormous and still growing task of moving coal. The solution to this logistical challenge would be the construction of a new standard gauge railway running from Port Augusta to Lee Creek. The line would avoid the gradients and tight curves found in the Flinders Ranges by traversing the flat plains to the west of the range, allowing for greater speeds and heavier loads to be hauled. Construction of the new line commenced in 1952. The existing fleet of 11 GM-class locomotives would not be sufficient to handle the new coal traffic. Additional locomotives would be required. Once again, the Commonwealth Railways turned to Clyde Engineering for further EMD-powered locomotives. However, the experience gained from the initial 11 units, combined with further developments by EMD in both the US and Australia, meant that the new locomotives would differ considerably from the previously delivered units. Arguably, the most significant change to the new locomotives would be the provision of 6 traction motors, 1 per axle, instead of the 4 previously used. In May 1951, EMD in the United States unveiled the SD7, or Special Duty Range, of locomotives. This was the first US domestic design of diesel locomotive with all 6 axles powered. A year later, the Victorian Railways would introduce the B-Class, a unique double-ended design that, while mechanically similar to the GM class, was also equipped with 6 powered axles. The advantage of this design was that a far higher tractive effort could be put down to the rail with only a modest increase in axle load. With heavy coal trains in mind, this was a major benefit. The original GM class body design was retained, although it was slightly modified. The most noticeable difference was the addition of an extra porthole window on the side of the body, allowing more light into the engine room. The original 567B series engine had been replaced with the new 567C series. This engine was not only more powerful at 1,750 horsepower, but would have a new design of crankcase. This design change would increase engine reliability, especially as crankcase cracking had been found in high-mileage B-series engines in the US. A uniquely Australian design change made with these locomotives would see the air horns move from the cab roof to the top of the nose. This would become a noticeable characteristic of these and other similar Clyde-built EMD locomotives used in Australia. 10 of the revised units were ordered by the Commonwealth Railways. The first, GM12, would emerge from Clyde Engineering's workshop in 1955, with most being available for Lee Creek coal traffic following the opening of the line in 1956. Coal wasn't the only commodity moved along the new railway, though. Forming part of the Central Australia Railway, livestock, passengers, and general freight were also conveyed along the new line. To handle this additional traffic, the standard gauge rails were pushed further north beyond Lee Creek, with the line ultimately terminating at Maree. The rest of the line to Alice Springs would remain narrow gauge, with Maree turning into a break of gauge station. A rather unique solution was found to make transshipping the freight traffic somewhat more efficient.
Once the first 90 miles of track was completed, a pickerback system was introduced to relieve transport demands and take advantage of the new line. Standard gauge flat-top trucks were laid with 3 feet 6 inches track, permitting the entire narrow gauge train to travel to its destination without unloading.
Although primarily ordered for service on Lee Creek and Maree services, the new GM class units would also operate on the Trans-Australian Railway, keeping the gradually growing freight traffic moving. The mechanical differences between the 10 new GM class units and the original fleet of 11 meant that some operational changes had to be made. The lower power and traction characteristics of the original locomotives meant that they are officially known, appropriately, as the F series because of their 4 traction motors. The new units were known as the S series for 6 motors. However, they were more commonly referred to as the GM1 and GM12 classes respectively. Aside from having different haulage limits applied between the two types, all 21 of the GM class would work together across the entire standard gauge Commonwealth Railways network on all duties. The success of the GM12 series of locomotives had caught the attention of other railway systems across Australia. The New South Wales Government Railways would order 6 locomotives, becoming their 42 class, which would enter service between 1955 and 1956. Similarly, the Victorian Railways would order 18 units, becoming their S-Class. Built across 2 batches between 1957 and 1961, these units, along with their New South Wales counterparts, would become the flagship engines of their systems, hauling such famous trains as the Brisbane Limited, Intercapital Daylight, the Spirit of Progress, and the Southern Aurora. Back on the Commonwealth Railways, the GM12 series of locomotives had proven to be as successful as the initial GM1 units. Although their impact had been felt on home territory, their sphere of influence was soon to expand massively, taking the diesels of the desert to new locations far beyond their outback home. following the opening of the Lee Creek and Maree Standard Gauge Line in 1956, the Commonwealth Railways went through a period of unprecedented growth. Coal traffic from Lee Creek continued to grow at a rapid rate, going from just under 500,000 tonnes in 1953 to over 2 million tonnes by 1967. On the main Trans-Australia Railway, through freight traffic between Port Pirie, Port Augusta and Kalgoorlie had more than tripled over the same time period. The movement of automotive bodies, completed vehicles and the introduction of piggybacking or trailer-on-flat car services in 1956 helped drive this exponential growth in traffic. The 21 GM-class locomotives in service, considered sufficient in 1957, were becoming hard-pressed to keep the traffic on offer moving by the early 1960s. As if to demonstrate how heavily worked the fleet was, by 1963, all 11 of the original GM1 series of locomotives had already run over 1 million miles each after only 11 years of operation. Additional engines were urgently required. An initial tender for 5 GM-class locomotives was let in April 1961. By the time the contract had been finalised with Clyde Engineering, the order had increased to 8 locomotives to be numbered GMs 22 to 29. Even as this order was being fulfilled in 1963, another tender was issued for an additional 5 engines to cope with growing traffic demands. These units were delivered during 1965, numbered GMs 30 to 34. As these additional locomotives were being constructed, events on the borders of the Commonwealth Railways territory were brewing. This would further transform the operations of the Trans-Australia Railway, finally turning it into a true Trans-Australian Railway. Ever since the line opened in 1917, this island of standard gauge rails had been flanked at its eastern and western termini by narrow gauge railways. In Western Australia, the Eastern Goldfields Railway ran 394 miles, or 635 kilometres, from the state capital Perth to Kalgoorlie. Here, it connected with the Commonwealth Railway system. Over 1,100 miles away in Port Pirie, the Commonwealth Railways met the narrow gauge South Australian Railways line running east towards Broken Hill in New South Wales. This was in addition to a broad gauge railway running south to the state capital of Adelaide, Port Pirie being a unique triple-gauge interchange. The break-of-gauge situation faced at each end of the Commonwealth Railway system was typical of the absurd lack of planning that had plagued Australian railway operations ever since the dawn of the network in the 1850s. Things reached a crisis point during World War II.
Look at the map. The Japs did. They saw the broken gauge between the states and laughed at the hopeless bottlenecks. Laughed at the line shrunk to 3 feet 6 in the west, but suddenly stopped and changed to 4 feet 8 and a half to cross the Nullarbor. And then stopped again and spread out wider to 5 feet 3 across Victoria. And stopped again and changed back to the standard in New South Wales, 4 feet 8 and a half. Then up to Queensland and change again, back to 3 feet 6.
The way forward for the Australian railway system was clear.
Standardise. Draw up the blueprints. Put the plans into action. From Perth to Darwin on a standard gauge.
In the decades following the war, efforts were made to standardise the main interstate rail network. In 1962, work started on what became known as the Western Australian Standard Gauge Railway, running from Perth to Kalgoorlie. This line would replace the original Eastern Goldfields Railway, running on a new alignment through the Avon Valley outside of Perth. An additional deviation was made on the new line, allowing ore trains to run from BHP's new iron ore mine at Coolia Nobbing to Perth. The new alignment used would also allow for faster and heavier trains to be operated. A year after work began in Western Australia, planning began in South Australia to convert the narrow gauge line running from Port Pirie to Broken Hill to standard gauge. This line connected with the New South Wales rail network at Broken Hill, which had been built to standard gauge from the outset. Like the Western Australian project, the new standard gauge railway would use a new alignment, particularly between Coburn and Broken Hill. These two gauge conversion projects, along with a major track upgrade program in Western New South Wales, would for the first time create a seamless transcontinental railway across Australia. From the Indian Ocean to the Pacific, it would finally be possible to make the journey on a single train. For the Commonwealth Railways, already swamped with rapidly rising quantities of freight and passengers, additional locomotives were needed to accommodate the expected boom in traffic that would result from a single-gauge railway. In 1965, an additional 5 GM-class locomotives were ordered, with another 8 requested the following year. These two orders would bring the GM-class fleet up to 47 units, by far the largest single group of EMD Streamliner locomotives used in Australia. One major design change made with the final 11 locomotives was the fitting of dynamic braking. This feature would allow the traction motors to be used as generators to help slow down a loaded train, while also reducing brake wear. This feature would be of particular benefit on the ever-growing Lee Creek coal trains. Ordering additional locomotives wasn't the only task being undertaken in preparation for coast-to-coast standardisation. A major program of track upgrades on the Trans-Australian Railway was also undertaken, which would include heavier rail, new sleepers, and a deeper layer of ballast. One aspect of the coast-to-coast standardisation project not carried out was the gauge conversion of the South Australian Railway's broad gauge line, running south from Port Pirie to the state capital of Adelaide, a distance of 134 miles or 216 kilometres. To assist with moving freight between Adelaide and the new transcontinental services, a new bogie exchange facility was commissioned in Port Pirie, opening on the 1st of November 1965. Instead of the traditional practice of transferring the freight piece by piece from one wagon to another, it was decided to instead lift the wagon body off its bogies on one gauge, roll them away, and lower the wagon onto a replacement set of a different gauge. Although still not as efficient as having a unified rail network, this system did improve matters. Similar bogie exchange facilities were also established at Peterborough in South Australia and in Melbourne in Victoria. At a ceremony held in Kalgoorlie on the 3rd of August 1968, a golden spike was driven to mark the completion of the new standard gauge railway from Kalgoorlie to Perth. This event also marked the formal connection of the new line to the Commonwealth Railways network, with the Trans-Australia Railway now no longer operating in isolation. Regular freight services jointly operated by the Commonwealth Railways and the Western Australian Government Railways commenced a few months later on the 1st of November. On the 13th of June 1969, the Trans-Australian Passenger Service was also extended from its long-time terminus of Kalgoorlie, now running through to Perth. Work on the South Australian portion of the standard gauge project was also continuing during this time. On the 29th of November 1969, a ceremonial golden spike was driven in Broken Hill by the Prime Minister John Gorton. Work, however, continued on the standard gauge line between Port Pirie and Broken Hill, with the new line finally being completed in January 1970. The long-held dream of a single-gauge railway running across Australia from east to west had finally been achieved. While the main beneficiary of the newly rebuilt railway would be freight traffic, a new prestige passenger service running across the country from Sydney to Perth was introduced, running for the first time in February 1970. This new train would be christened the Indian Pacific and would become the pride of the railways of Australia, including the Commonwealth Railways. The GM-class locomotives would not only take pride of place on the Indian Pacific or the Trans-Australian services across the Nullarbor, but for the first time could be seen thundering westwards all the way to Perth on the Western Australian network, working in tandem with locomotive power from 1974. Inter-system operation of locomotives across state borders had begun. The unrivalled dominance of the 47 GM-class locomotives on mainline services would, however, be short-lived. Throughout the 1960s, freight traffic across the Commonwealth Railways had not only tripled, but with the opening of the standard gauge railway across the country, the challenge of keeping trains moving would only be amplified during the 1970s. In addition, a new branch line running from Port Augusta to Whyalla in South Australia, built to serve the steel mill there, would only compound matters. By the time parliamentary approval for the new line had been granted in 1970, steel traffic from Whyalla to destinations in New South Wales and Victoria was approaching 140,000 tonnes annually. This traffic was moved by road from Whyalla to Port Augusta before being delivered by rail. Although forming the backbone of the standard gauge diesel fleet and continuing to be incredibly reliable locomotives, the GM class were now starting to show their limitations in terms of both power output and efficiency. New developments by EMD and Clyde Engineering, however, would answer the ever-growing needs of the Commonwealth Railways. Back in 1967, the Western Australian Government Railways had introduced their L-class locomotives for standard gauge operations. Based on EMD's domestic SD40 model, they were a significant advancement over the collection of lower-powered, first-generation diesels then in use across Australia. Offering 3,000 horsepower for traction from the new 645 engine, one L-class locomotive was capable of doing the work presently handled by two of the early GM1 series locomotives. The efficiencies made in train operating, staff wages, and maintenance costs were immense, and the Commonwealth Railways quickly followed suit. The design chosen by the Commonwealth Railways for their new 3,000 horsepower locomotives was unique, and is worthwhile briefly examining. While the engine and electrical control equipment was fairly typical of the SD40 series of locomotives, the new design would retain a full-width car body and the famous F-series nose. This seemingly outdated design of body, produced 6 years after the final unit was built in the US, was chosen by the Commonwealth Railways as it allowed for the engine room to be pressurised, keeping dust out of the engine and electrical equipment. The first of these locomotives, CL1, was named after the Prime Minister John Gorton and was available for traffic in January 1970. The following month, it became the lead locomotive used on the inaugural Indian Pacific service over the Commonwealth Railways portion of the journey. The CL class had become the new flagship locomotive of the Commonwealth Railways, with the GM class now taking on a more supporting role across the network. Over the next 2 years, constantly increasing transcontinental freight tonnages, combined with the opening of the Whyalla branch, meant that by 1972, 17 CL-class units had been placed into traffic. The final one would be the last EMD locomotive in the world to be built with the famous streamlined nose. An era of locomotive design had now passed into history. For the GM class, though, while no longer the symbol of the Commonwealth Railways, would still have decades of useful work ahead of them. In fact, their presence was soon to be felt hundreds of miles away from Commonwealth Railways territory. The North East Main Line in Victoria, running from Melbourne to Albury in New South Wales, had been operated with a dedicated fleet of standard gauge locomotives since the opening of the gauge converted line in 1962. By 1971, however, motive power shortages on their broad gauge network meant that some of the locomotives allocated to the North East line had to be gauge converted to cover these shortages. Naturally, this created a gap in their standard gauge locomotive roster. At the same time, the continuing arrivals of the CL-class locomotives on the Commonwealth Railways, each capable of doing the work of two GM-class units, meant that several locomotives could be made available to the Victorian Railways to fill the gap in their locomotive fleet. As the GM-class was similar to the local S-class units, these would operate on an almost like-for-like basis. Three locomotives, GMs 31, 32 and 34, were hired by the Victorian Railways from December 1971. These arrived in Melbourne between the 18th and 25th of that month, after the long journey across South Australia and through western and southern New South Wales. After minor modifications for local operating requirements and crew familiarisation, the three GM-class units were quickly placed into Victorian Railway service. Continued motive power shortages, however, meant that the stay in Victoria would last all the way from 1971 to 1976. GMs 32 and 34 were returned to South Australia in March of that year, while GM 31 remained in Victoria until October. When the three locomotives returned to home rails, though, operations had changed dramatically, far more than had occurred with the introduction of the CL class. The Commonwealth Railways were no more. Although the Commonwealth Railways had entered the 1970s as an efficient and profitable railway system, the same could not be said for the state government-run railway networks around Australia. Mirroring the challenges faced by other railway systems around the world, the state railways were facing severe financial and operational pressures on multiple fronts. Common carrier regulations, which forced the railways to convey any freight loading offered, were still being enforced. These regulations were compounded by community service obligations imposed by the governments. While beneficial to the often remote communities served, this meant that increasingly, train services on isolated branch lines were forced to provide freight and passenger services that made a financial loss on every wagon moved. These losses were made up for by subsidies paid for more profitable services or by the taxpayer directly. This situation was made even worse by rapidly growing road and air competition. Services provided by mostly private firms were able to compete with and direct traffic away from the railways. From the 1930s onwards, heavy regulation of road hauliers, including limits on their operational territory, expensive road usage licences and other state taxes, had been imposed as a means of protecting their railway investments. These protections, however, were declared invalid in 1954 after a legal case between the New South Wales government and road haulier Hughes and Vale went through the Australian High Court and all the way to the Privy Council in London. This determined that no state or federal government could arbitrarily exclude the road haulier from the use of the interstate roads, as reported in the Sydney Morning Herald of that year. This decision meant that the railways were no longer protected from competing transport modes. The necessity for the various state networks to provide loss-making services, combined with unchecked competition from other transport modes, meant that operational deficits were quickly escalating across all states. This became a major headache for the various state governments. It was becoming a national problem, and it was seen that a truly national fix was needed. The election of the Australian Labor Party to federal parliament in December 1972, under the reformist leadership of Gough Whitlam, would see a national plan for the various railway systems put into action. Within 2 weeks of being elected, an offer was made to the various state governments to place their railway networks under federal government control. Similar in some respects to Conrail in the United States, the new organisation would be known as the Australian National Railways Commission, later branded simply as Australian National. Although there had been interest from the state governments about handing over control of their railways, political jealousies and ideological differences prevented the dream of a nationally unified rail system from becoming a reality. Despite the immediate benefits to their state budgets, the Western Australian and Queensland state governments quickly declined the offer, primarily due to political differences. Despite their networks having the highest operational deficits in the nation, New South Wales and Victoria would also refuse to hand over their rail systems. The federal effort wasn't to be in vain, though. Two states, South Australia and Tasmania, would accept the takeover of their networks. The Tasmanian railways, estimated to be a year away from a system-wide collapse, and the non-metropolitan operations in South Australia would be merged with the Commonwealth Railways to form Australian National. Negotiations between the Commonwealth government and the state governments of South Australia and Tasmania commenced in early 1973. These discussions would be a drawn-out affair, as it would not be until 1975 that the railway transfer agreement would be finalised. Australian National would take over the financial but not operational responsibility of the former state networks on the 1st of July that year. However, the Commonwealth legislation to ratify the Railway Transfer Agreement would only come into effect on the 10th of November 1975. The following day, in the most dramatic moment of Australian politics, the Prime Minister who proposed unifying the Australian railway network was dismissed from office, along with the entire federal government.
Well, may we say, God save the Queen. Because nothing will save the Governor-General.
Despite the change of government, now under the Conservative leadership of Malcolm Fraser, work continued to establish the new organisation and finalise the various operational agreements. It wouldn't be until the 1st of March 1978 that Australian National would commence day-to-day railway operations. Hundreds of miles away from the Canberra political arena, crossing the desert in the heart of the country, the GM-class locomotives, along with the rest of the former Commonwealth Railways fleet, would come under Australian National management. After 1978, it became common for the GM-class to work east from Port Pirie, along the former South Australian Railway standard gauge line to Broken Hill, sharing traffic duties with ex-SAR Motive Power. The desire of Australian National to standardise key routes within their territory meant that as the 1980s dawned, the operational territory for these well-travelled locomotives would only continue to expand. This expansion would take the GM class to both the remote centre of the country and the suburban sprawl of Adelaide. The Central Australia Railway. A grand but thwarted vision to build a north-south transcontinental link through the outback. Constructed between 1878 and 1929 from Port Augusta to Alice Springs, it would never run through to the north coast. Instead, it became a vital supply line to the vast centre of Australia. Following the opening of the standard gauge railway from Port Augusta to Lee Creek and Maree in the 1950s, the remaining 539-mile or 869-kilometre-long section from Maree to Alice Springs would continue to operate as an isolated narrow-gauge section. All passenger and freight traffic passing through Maree had to be transshipped from one train to another, with passengers travelling on the GAN having to make the change of train at nearly midnight. Because of the vast distances to be covered through the remote countryside, the track work on the Central Australia Railway had been laid to a very light standard. The dry terrain meant that the track was laid down without any ballast. As a result, train speeds were spectacularly slow, with even the famous GAN passenger service running at a very sedate pace.
What the GAN is famous for, though, is its speed. We left Maree at midnight last night, and we're due to reach Alice Springs in the centre of Australia at breakfast time tomorrow. A schedule which means maintaining a cracking 17 miles an hour.
Despite the slow speeds enforced, the journey for both passenger and freight trains was not a smooth one.
The excellence of the dining room service was even more commendable under the circumstances. The large carriages which rode awkwardly on the small bogies often lurched violently over the twisted, undulating track.
Despite the arid nature of the route, the line was prone to regular flash flooding, which would delay trains potentially for months at a time. In South Australia, the line ran along the vast floodplain of the normally dry Lake Eyre, while in the Northern Territory, the Finke River also had to be crossed. After heavy rain, the area around Lake Eyre and the Finke River would wash out the line with depressing regularity. In 1930, only a few months after the line had reached Alice Springs, flooding meant that train services had to be cancelled for 7 weeks. In 1974, flooding would again suspend all rail traffic, this time for 9 weeks. Besides these exceptional examples, regular smaller floods would constantly disrupt train services. During the latter years of operation, it was not unknown for stranded passengers to be airlifted out while the train waited for the water to subside and track repairs to be carried out. In fact, out of the many bridges used on the line, only one, the impressive Algy Buckner Bridge crossing the Neils River, could be relied upon during adverse weather conditions. The lightweight, slow, rough, and flood-prone line was becoming both increasingly archaic and uneconomic. Starting in 1967, the Commissioner of the Commonwealth Railways, Keith Smith, had lobbied for a replacement standard gauge railway to Alice Springs to replace the original line. A key design criteria was that the new line would run on a floodproof alignment. Surveys eventually led to the new line branching off from the Trans-Australia Railway at Tarcoola, before running northwards to Alice Springs. On average, the line was built around 150 kilometres west of the original route, avoiding terrain prone to flooding. A major component of the new line was the construction of a new high-level bridge across the Finke River. Work on the new 831-kilometre Tarcoola to Alice Springs Railway, the largest rail project in Australia since the Trans-Australia Railway over 50 years previously, commenced in 1975. GM-class locomotives were used during the construction effort, hauling concrete sleepers, rails, ballast and other materials to the railhead. By 1980, standard gauge rails had finally reached Alice Springs, and in October that year, GM-class locomotives 19 and 38, running light engine, became the first standard gauge rail movement to reach the red heart of the country. Soon afterwards, on the 9th of October, the inaugural standard gauge train would arrive into Alice Springs, opening the new line. The following month, the narrow gauge GAN passenger service ran for the final time. Regular standard gauge GAN services commenced in December, with GM25 leading another GM class locomotive on that first service. Despite some of the class now being nearly 30 years old, the GM class fleet would dominate freight and GAN passenger services on the new Alice Springs line in the 1980s. In 1989, a GM class locomotive would even provide assistance to the visiting steam locomotive, the Flying Scotsman, for the Port Augusta to Alice Springs portion of its journey around Australia. While standard gauge rails were being laid northwards to Alice Springs, another gauge conversion project within South Australia would further expand the operational territory of the GM class. As previously mentioned, the 1970 East-West Standardisation Project had left the South Australian state capital of Adelaide isolated from the standard gauge network in Port Pirie. Although planning to convert the present broad gauge line to standard gauge had commenced in the late 1960s, various political and planning delays meant that it would not be until 1980 that the project would be given the formal go-ahead. Work to convert most of the existing line commenced in March 1981, with the Port Pirie to Adelaide Standardisation Project opening to traffic in December 1982. Although some former South Australian Railways locomotives had been allocated to standard gauge services, the GM class quickly established themselves on the newly converted line, and ever since 1982 have effectively made Adelaide a home operating base. The first standard gauge freight service from Port Pirie to Adelaide arrived behind GM class units 14, 16, 19 and 21. During these early days of standard gauge operations, the GM class would dominate freight services running to and from Adelaide, although sharing responsibilities with other motive power. While the early 1980s saw the home territory of the GM class dramatically expanded, further motive power shortages in Victoria would once again see several class members work in that state. Between October 1981 and November 1982, GMs 30, 31, 33 and 35 would all see service on the North East Main Line between Melbourne and Albury before returning to South Australia. Continuing motive power shortages from November 1983 through to November 1985 would see the GM class placed on hire in Victoria for a third time, with GMs 23, 24, 27 and 28 helping keep the Victorian traffic moving. This would however be the final time that GM class units would be hired by Victoria to operate on the North East Line. New motive power deliveries to the state would finally ease long-term locomotive shortages. Since its formation in 1975, Australian National had retained the liveries used by the three systems that had merged to form the organisation: the Commonwealth Railways, the South Australian Railways and the Tasmanian Government Railways. Each of these organisations had a different image, and for the first few years, the locomotives and rolling stock operated by Australian National were a vivid rainbow of colour. The only noticeable difference signifying a change of ownership during this period was the change of lettering on the sides of locomotives and rolling stock. A new corporate identity, clearly branding Australian National as a smart, lean, business-focused organisation it wanted to be, was needed. To help break away from the traditional railway image, Australian National engaged the services of Sydney-based communications consultant Peter Hoovenier to help develop the new corporate look. Australia's unofficial national colours of green and gold were adopted, although the gold would be substituted for yellow. In addition to the new colours, a new corporate logo was also developed. Taking inspiration from similar organisations like British Rail, Nederlandse Spoorwegen, or the Dutch National Railways, and in particular Canadian National, a new simple logo was developed. The letters A and N of Australian National were merged, with a representation of rails combining the two. On the 12th of March 1981, the new look for Australian National was unveiled at a ceremony held in Port Augusta. The locomotive on display at that ceremony was none other than GM1. Despite now being 30 years old at that point, the early members of the GM class were still seen as a key part of the locomotive fleet. Over the next few years, most of the fleet of GM-class locomotives would be repainted into the new livery. With a new look and a much expanded presence across South Australia and the wider national network as a whole, the GM class would become busier and more prominent as the 1980s would progress. At least, that is how it seemed. A new coat of paint couldn't hide the fact that the GM class units were starting to show their age. Although still a dependable unit, locomotive technology, power and fuel efficiency had long since surpassed what the GM class could provide. With Australian National's drive to provide a more efficient, cost-effective railway service, it became apparent that new locomotives would be needed. Australian National was no stranger to acquiring new motive power, ordering 8 AL class units in 1976, followed by an additional 10 BL class locomotives from 1983. These locomotives didn't directly affect the GM fleet though, with the AL class simply supplementing the existing fleet, while the BL class would predominantly make a name for themselves on the steeply graded broad gauge main south line over the Adelaide Hills. In 1985, a review of motive power by Australian National found that 43 new locomotives would be able to replace 76 older units. The operational efficiencies provided by a new fleet were considerable, allowing more tonnage to be hauled by fewer locomotives while needing less fuel or mechanical repairs. This meant that the now aging fleet of GM class locomotives were in the firing line. The GM class would start to dwindle before the new motive power could arrive, however, due to accidents. On the 24th of March 1986, GM29 would become the first of the class to be retired, following a major collision with a road train at Marla on the Alice Springs line. The battered remains would be cut up for scrap in 1987. The new fleet of locomotives would start to enter service in 1988, commencing with the 15 DL class units. These were the first Australian locomotives to be fitted with the EMD 710 series engine. Over 30 years of engine development meant that the 12-cylinder engine fitted in the DL class could produce twice as much horsepower as the 16-cylinder engines fitted in the GM fleet, all within the same locomotive weight. Following the final DL class delivery in 1990, 14 EL class locomotives were introduced to service. These had the distinction of being the first General Electric locomotives used on the system and were quickly placed onto Indian Pacific and GAN passenger services as well as priority freight traffic. The last batch of new motive power acquired by Australian National were the impressive AN class. 11 of these 4,000 horsepower locomotives were obtained from Clyde Engineering, marking a return to EMD products, and were introduced between 1992 and 1993. For the aged and well-travelled GM class fleet, the arrival of 40 new locomotives over a period of 5 years meant that withdrawals rapidly accelerated, with many of the class being placed into storage. 8 were sent for scrap in 1990, while a further 8 would meet the same fate the following year. The GM class, once the flagship of the Commonwealth Railways, which heralded the end of the steam era, were now themselves being replaced by new and more efficient motive power. With 18 units already cut up for scrap by 1992, and many others seemingly awaiting the same fate in storage, it seemed like it would be the end of the line for these remarkable locomotives. As the 1990s progressed, however, several surprises were in store which, one way or another, would ensure that some of the fleet would see their fortunes restored. The new motive power acquired by Australian National during this time was part of a much larger transformation of operations happening across the AN network. Modern rolling stock, upgraded track and new, more efficient operating practices had transformed the way train services were operated. At the dawn of the 1990s, Australian National was arguably the most advanced railway operator in Australia. However, all these changes could only really be felt within Australian National's territory. Going west from Kalgoorlie or east from Broken Hill, a transcontinental service would still need to be handed over to either West Rail or the New South Wales State Rail Authority to complete its journey. While most of Australia was now connected by a unified track gauge, state and territory rivalries were still alive and well, with a locomotive from each system leading a train through its territory. This resulted in a cumbersome and inefficient rail network, with an unnecessary duplication of operators, safety systems and managements. It was clear that something had to be done to unify the railways of Australia. However, lessons learnt from the creation of Australian National during the 1970s meant that the new organisation would take a different approach to the matter. Incorporated on the 17th of November 1991, the National Rail Corporation, or simply National Rail, was established to provide coast-to-coast rail freight services. Unlike Australian National, National Rail would focus solely on interstate traffic, leaving local operations with the various state-based rail systems. During the establishment process of National Rail, the interstate freight business, associated rolling stock and facilities from the various rail networks were handed over to the new authority. While the establishment of National Rail would greatly benefit the long-haul movement of freight around the country, the handover of this traffic by the rail authorities would have major implications, as the revenue from this traffic would also be relinquished. Arguably, the system affected the most was Australian National, whose long-haul freight services were the most profitable part of their operations. The loss of this traffic was compounded by being forced to hand over their newly acquired locomotive fleet. These changes would mean Australian National would shift their focus towards the remaining intrastate services in South Australia and Tasmania. With most of the recently acquired motive power now handed over to National Rail, the previous program of withdrawing the GM class suddenly came to a halt, with 17 still in traffic by October 1993. These would find a new niche, being ideal for intrastate services within South Australia. The rugged and reliable nature of the surviving GM class units meant that they would hold a broad appeal to Australian National in this role, quite literally for two locomotives. In the early 1990s, the broad gauge portion of the Australian National network, operating predominantly in the southeastern and mid-north regions of South Australia, was struggling with persistent motive power shortages. To provide additional locomotives at short notice, it was determined that two GM class would be selected for conversion to broad gauge. This would be achieved by using bogies acquired from the similar S-class units in Victoria. In 1992, GM class units 42 and 43 were selected for conversion. Both were from the final batch delivered with dynamic braking, perfect for the steep gradients through the Adelaide Hills. This excursion onto broad gauge metals would be brief. $160 million in funding had been provided from the federal government to enable the conversion of the Adelaide to Melbourne mainline from broad gauge to standard gauge. This National Rail administered project would remove the final missing link from having a unified interstate rail network in Australia. As a result, the two broad gauge GM class units were returned to standard gauge in June 1995. Although the GM class had long been displaced from prestige mainline service by the mid-1990s, they were settling into their new role as locomotive power. This change in status closely mirrored that of their operator, Australian National, who increasingly focused on local South Australian traffic. This was in stark contrast to AN's original vision as a national rail operator. By 1995, it was facing multiple challenges that would ultimately lead to its downfall. The modern motive power allocated to National Rail from Australian National was only a lease, not a formal transfer of ownership. Because of a quirk of National Rail's founding legislation, it was not obligated to pay AN for the use of its locomotives. By 1996, 2 years' worth of payments had not been made. The Australian National annual report from that year noted, "The Commission, were it operating in a pure commercial environment, would not provide such services to the NRC." This would only serve to compound Australian National's deteriorating financial condition. AN's rapidly declining revenues were compounded by a massive debt that had accrued over the years. The previous program of reforms and upgrades conducted across the network had been funded by a series of loans rather than by direct government investment. Although these investments had resulted in profits being made during the early 1990s, these were not enough to start paying down the debts that had been accumulated. A third factor conspiring in the demise of Australian National involved one of the fundamental components of a railway, the track. In a move to bring the interstate rail network under a uniform management
a new organisation known as Track Australia, now known as the Australian Rail Track Corporation, was established. Australian National, on the other hand, had been structured in the traditional manner, owning everything associated with the running of a railway from the ground up, including the collection of track access fees by third parties running over its network. With the handover of the mainline network to Track Australia and the loss of the interstate freight business, Australian National was left with short-haul local freight, a handful of long-distance passenger services, and a mountain of debt. The deteriorating condition of the organisation was summed up by the Australian Financial Review newspaper at the time as being, unlike the other public assets which have been privatised in the huge disposal sale of public wealth over the past few years, there are no surplus cash flows, no monopoly rental returns to underpin the attractiveness of the business to private venturers, and it isn't a good measure of the long-term viability of the AN activities. This state of affairs was concerning to not only AN's management, but the federal government itself. In 1996, a report was commissioned to examine the operations of Australian National, but also the relationship of the government with AN. The Brew Report, compiled by John Brew, was handed down in September 1996. In the report, the South Australian freight business was to be either handed back to the state government, privatised, or simply closed. Similar recommendations were made for the Tasmanian network. On the 6th of March 1997, it was publicly announced that Australian National was to be privatised, with the sale to be finalised by the 30th of June that year. The sale of the South Australian freight network, along with the rest of Australian National, would be complete by November 1997. The GM-class locomotives, along with the remaining AN fleet, would soon be working for a new owner. From the United States, a streak of orange and black would soon be seen across the fields and hills of South Australia. After nearly 20 years of operation, the Australian National Railways Commission would operate its final services on the 7th of November 1997. From that date, all local freight operations in South Australia were handed over to the new owners, US Short Line operator Genesee & Wyoming. The new organisation immediately put its US short line experience to work in Australia, consolidating the newly acquired South Australian network and making it pay its way. For the remaining GM class, the new owners would keep the operational units busy on intrastate grain trains and general freight workings. It was these operations that would see the surviving locomotives remain in service, particularly on branch lines. Following the gauge conversion of the Adelaide to Melbourne mainline from broad gauge to standard gauge in 1995, multiple branch lines within the southern portion of South Australia would be isolated from the rest of the network. While the route to Mount Gambier was controversially closed as a result, the lines conveying bulk grain traffic from Appamurra, Loxton and Pinneroo would be retained and converted to standard gauge between 1995 and 1998. Soon enough, it became a regular sight for GM-class locomotives to work on these routes. The turbulent nature of the newly privatised railway system would mean that for the first time, the surviving GM class would serve more than one master. In 1998, Melbourne-based operator Great Northern Rail Services would purchase from Genesee & Wyoming 12 long-stored locomotives. Although some were little more than hulks, several units would get a second lease on life. GMs 10, 22 and 27 were rebuilt at Islington Workshops in Adelaide and would emerge glowing in the new Great Northern livery, inspired by the former Gulf, Mobile and Ohio Railroad in the United States. These revived locomotives would join the growing Great Northern fleet in Victoria, providing power for hire by other freight operators. By the turn of the millennium, the GM class, which only a few years earlier appeared to be coming to the end of their careers, were enjoying a newfound purpose in the privatised rail industry. Genesee & Wyoming would operate 11 GM-class locomotives in active freight service around South Australia. From 1999 onwards, most of these units would receive the vibrant orange and black livery, steadily consigning the green and yellow of the Australian National era to history. The new lease on life for the surviving GM-class units would only continue, and their roles would even expand once more as the new millennium dawned across Australia. The long-held dream of a railway running across Australia from north to south had continued to simmer away in the political background. Following the completion of the Tarcoola to Alice Springs Railway in 1980, plans to extend the line the remaining 1,420 kilometres from Alice Springs to Darwin were drawn up and surveys carried out. Construction was due to commence in 1983, but a federal election held that year resulted in a change of government, and aside from surveys and land acquisition, work on the project was halted. It wasn't until the 1990s that work would take place to make the dream become a reality. A joint venture between the South Australian and Northern Territory governments, known as the Australasia Railway Corporation, was established to help oversee the project. An invitation to provide expressions of interest from the private sector was made, and in June 1999, the Asia Pacific Transportation Consortium was announced as a successful bidder to help deliver the project. Genesee and Wyoming would form part of the new consortium, who would run train services under the Freightlink banner. Although new locomotives and wagons had been ordered, existing equipment would be used to help build the new line and operate train services upon opening. Construction on the new line would finally commence in July 2001. In January 2004, the new line from Alice Springs to Darwin was finally opened, with transcontinental services crossing the country from Adelaide to Darwin. Although four new FQ-class locomotives had been delivered in time for the opening of the line, this was not enough, and a variety of Genesee and Wyoming-supplied motive power would also be used. The venerable GM class would once again answer the call, being seen periodically on these transcontinental services. The early years of the new millennium was a time of great change across the Australian railway network. The privatisation of Australian National had opened the floodgates for other state governments around Australia to follow suit. Between 1998 and 2002, the railway systems of Western Australia, Victoria, Tasmania, New South Wales, and even National Rail were all offered to private firms. With the former boundaries governed by the state borders now mostly a thing of the past, and the interstate rail network now regarded as open access, a plethora of new operators would come onto the scene. In these early years of private operation, money for new motive power was not always available. This meant that elderly locomotives were either kept in service or even removed from storage and put back to work. The surviving members of the GM class, now running under the banners of Great Northern and Genesee and Wyoming, were no exception to this. As time would march on, they would find themselves providing power wherever it was needed. In this environment, Genesee and Wyoming would start to strike out beyond former Australian National Territory, pushing into New South Wales. A number of the GM class would head east, while the rest would continue to operate in South Australia. This work would also include the periodic hiring out of the fleet to other operators from 2002 onwards. Ironically, as many of the GM class were heading over to New South Wales, one unit would briefly make a return to South Australia. Now working for Southern Short Haul Railroad after the collapse of Great Northern in 2003, GM10 was hired for use on the Adelaide to Bowmans and Port Pirie freight services to cover motive power shortages during 2005. Following the sojourn in South Australia, GM10 would return to New South Wales. The 2000s would, however, prove to be something of a final hurrah for these veterans of the rails. Having narrowly escaped being withdrawn completely in the early 1990s by Australian National, the remaining GM class in South Australia had lived something of a charmed life, continuing to find active work again and again. However, the passage of time would eventually catch up with these locomotives, and their luck appeared to be finally running out. Like so many other things, the decline and fall of the South Australian GM class from service could not be put down to a single reason, but a confluence of circumstances. Despite seeing extensive usage across state borders, their main duty continued to be the haulage of both domestic and export grain traffic around South Australia. Over the years, these train services had grown in size. Starting in 2004, a fleet of high-capacity grain hoppers had been introduced to replace older and smaller wagons. Initially, train lengths averaged around 40 wagons per service, although the newly delivered hoppers would increase the tonnages being hauled. Progressive infrastructure improvements carried out on the mainline network, however, would allow train lengths to be extended from 40 to 50 wagons. The growing size and weight of South Australian grain trains were becoming a significant challenge for the ageing fleet of GM-class locomotives, especially on the steeply graded line running south of Adelaide through the Adelaide Hills. These difficulties were compounded by concerns about locomotive reliability and crew conditions. Genesee and Wyoming at this time had one of the oldest locomotive fleets in active service on the mainline network in South Australia, with the GM class being the oldest of the lot. It became clear that new motive power would soon be needed. In the early 2010s, the use of more modern locomotives on lease became more common. In addition, Genesee and Wyoming's purchase of Freightlink meant that the four FQ class units could be released from their regular Darwin line duties and would become common power on grain trains. From 2011, brand new motive power in the form of the GWA and GWU classes of locomotives would arrive into South Australia en masse. While increasing train tonnages and new motive power were squeezing the GM class from mainline duties, their relatively lightweight would ensure that they would remain in traffic on branch lines in the Murraylands region of South Australia. This, however, could not last, and these final holdouts would eventually fall. The Upper Murra line would close in 2005, only 10 years after the gauge conversion from broad gauge had been carried out. As a result, only the Loxton and Pinneroo lines remained. Even so, changing transport demands from the grain industry would result in these lines facing a very uncertain future. Following much speculation and a short-lived state government reprieve, it was announced by grain handler Viterra that closure would take place in 2015. The closure of these branch lines was the final straw, and during 2015, withdrawals of the remaining GM class with Genesee and Wyoming would take place over the following months, with most of the fleet being placed into storage at Dry Creek by mid-2016. Two long-stored units, GMs 32 and 34, would be scrapped during 2015 and 2016. Only one unit, GM 45, would continue to operate, being relegated to shunting duties at the Wireless Steelworks during this time, appropriately enough on former Commonwealth Railways territory. For all intents and purposes, though, it seemed as if the era of the GM class in South Australia had finally come to an end. As the new year of 2016 dawned, the railway scene had changed. A familiar presence which had graced the rails of South Australia for over 65 years could now only be found in memory. Sitting in quiet retirement at Dry Creek, the GM class fleet of Genesee and Wyoming were awaiting their seemingly inevitable fate. As had happened many times in the past, though, circumstances would offer yet another lifeline to some of these engines. The Australian Rail Track Corporation had commenced a major program of upgrades on the main line running north from Adelaide to Tarcoola on the Trans-Australia Railway, a distance of over 700 kilometres. This project would involve the insertion of heavier rail, new sleepers, and the laying down of a deeper layer of ballast. Genesee and Wyoming had been given the contract to haul rail and ballast trains, but with all of their motive power already in use, it was decided to resurrect two of the GM-class locomotives stored at Dry Creek. For many months, these units would return to their desert home, upgrading the Trans-Australia Railway for the next generation of rail operations. The connection of these locomotives to the Trans-Australia Railway was recognised during celebrations held in Port Augusta to mark the centenary of the line. On the 22nd of October 2017, one of the two revived units, GM 43, would be one of the locomotives displayed at Port Augusta Station as a feature of the event. Once the ARTC upgrade contract had been completed, the two reactivated GM class units would continue to see sporadic use around the network. Two additional GM class locomotives, now under the ownership of Horizon since July 2022, have since made an occasional return to the rails in South Australia. These locomotives, along with the three Southern Short Haul Railroad units, continue to serve the railways of Australia. Indeed, it can be suggested that the GM class were the first truly national type of locomotives used here. Born out of a need to replace steam power on the Trans-Australia Railway, the arrival of the GM class immediately shrank the coast-to-coast journey by over 24 hours. The stunning success of these locomotives in one of the most inhospitable environments on Earth encouraged other states to use similar types of locomotives on their systems. With the standardisation of the railway network across Australia, the GM class were amongst the first locomotives to regularly work beyond their home territory, running through Western Australia and Victoria during the early 1970s, opening the door for regular inter-system rail operations in Australia. Similarly, the GM class formed a key part in helping make the dream of a north-south transcontinental railway a reality, linking Darwin to the rest of the country by rail. Even in the modern era, the venerable GM class have consistently found new niches for themselves in the privatised rail industry, continuing to carry out whatever task is required of them, just as they have done so since 1951. This has been the story of the Commonwealth Railway's GM class locomotives, the diesels of the desert.